The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Masters in Business with Barry Ritholtz on Bloomberg Radio.
My special guest today is Jonathan Miller. He is president and CEO of Miller Samuel. The firm is best known for supplying data and analytics to the real estate industry. Anytime you see a report from one of the major real estate brokers showing houses that are on the market for how long, what the state of the market is, the odds are that Jonathan is the man behind that. Jonathan Miller, welcome to our shelter-in-place version of Masters in Business.
Very glad to be here and getting a break from the self-quarantine. Talking to another human being is always nice.
So let's talk a little bit about what's going on. We're recording this the last week in March. Normally, this is the time of year when we would see a ton of new real estate listings and open houses and really the kickoff of the spring selling season. How's the real estate market?
It's interesting. The fact is there's very little data to test the water, so to speak. Really, the only thing we're seeing right now that is in real time, because real estate generally is a much slower moving type of asset class, is the change in patterns of listing inventory. So, for example, in Manhattan, for basically since the beginning of time, inventory rises from year end of any given year, whether it's a weak or strong market, through the end of March. And over the last 5 years, it's averaged about a 10% increase, plus or minus a couple percent every year. And this year, it's down 9%. So we're not seeing people put properties on the market. And that literally is one of the only valid data points right now in the housing market, at least in New York. We're seeing stories about contract activity, but that's actually misleading because contracts typically, I think when people think of a contract, they think of, when buyer and seller sort of shake hands and, boom, that's the contract. But the reality is, the contract data that we're seeing now represents 2 to 3 weeks ago. An offer is made, it's accepted by the seller, and then you have, or vice versa, and then it goes to the attorneys and takes a couple of weeks. So I really think next week or the week after is when we're going to start seeing the real slowdown in activity.
So real estate on a big lag. Last week I saw a really amusing article on Bloomberg News. People are still putting their mansions on the market. And is that really going on, or is that still part of the lag that might have been happening in February and the beginning of March, but its listings have dropped off?
Listings have dropped off, at least in what we're seeing. When you look at January and February this year, after at least in New York Metro, it's been a tough couple of years with the onslaught of new taxes beginning with the in 2018 and then into 2019, all kinds of headwinds for housing. And then there was somewhat.
You're referring to the change in the SALT deductions?
SALT tax. We had the rent law, which punished, landlords, which is primarily what investors are. We also saw an increase in the mansion tax, transfer tax. So there's a lot of headwinds, to use that phrase or word. And now we have this, we saw an uptick in sentiment. A lot more offers are being made. And all that is sort of out the window because we have a new sort of milestone to grapple with in the market. And that's the uncertainty of the virus. It's interesting. A lot of comparisons have been made to other seminal events in real estate, like the 9/11 moment, like the Lehman moment, and they're all very different in scale and, you know, and what actually occurred. But what's a little different this time is that in those prior two moments, there was actually a new day. And the further you got away from that moment, you could sort of process it, the tragedy, and start thinking about the future. Right now, we don't know anything other than it's got further to go, and we don't know how much further it has to go. So there's definitely a grayness to the outlook.
So one little ray of sunshine amongst all this negativity, the Fed took rates down to zero. That has to be good for mortgage rates or not. Tell us what's going on with mortgages.
Well, if you look at Freddie Mac's 30 over the last 30 days, a 30-year fix, mortgage rates actually are a little bit higher now than they were at the end of February. And one of the reasons is just capacity, that many lenders laid off a large amount of processing staff 6 or 9 months ago when there wasn't much action going on in changes in rates and there was some stability. In addition, especially in the refi world, there's a tremendous concern about liquidity. In other words, you know, when you have escalating layoffs, rising unemployment, and people will say, you know, in the middle of their application and they lose their job, that is a much different risk profile than if we were in the conditions we were, you know, a couple months ago. So the low rates in many ways have fallen on deaf ears in the housing market. Initially got everybody excited that it would help housing run through this crisis, but I think it'll have limited effect. Certainly better than not doing it, but not much tangible evidence that it's going to make a difference.
I was kind of fascinated, Jonathan, by something I read about on your weekly newsletter. And I was very surprised to read that brokers are now hiding the number of days that houses have been on the market from buyers. What is that about? Why would anyone imagine that that is helpful to buyers? And shouldn't we be in favor of more transparency in these transactions?
Well, Barry, you hit it on the head that we should be in favor of greater transparency. What the real estate community or the brokers have been grappling with in many markets is that, you know, things have slowed down before we came into this crisis in certain segments of the market, and they've been dealing with anxious sellers. And then we have this crisis, and it's being presented as, let's give the sellers a break and let's essentially, there's no other word for it, but hide the calculation for days on market on some list sites like in New York. Street Easy, which is owned by Zillow, is announced that they will be hiding days on market. Same thing with the Real Estate Board of New York, which is somewhat of our local multiple listing system. And we hear of this in other parts of the country, but other parts aren't. The problem is with this is that it ignores, I mean, last time I checked, that there's a buyer and a seller in each transaction. And the buyer is essentially, this data is being hidden from them. The problem is, or actually the you know, what's actually happening is the raw data, like the listing dates, things like that, are not being hidden. But when you open and look at a listing, it'll instead of saying, you know, on the market 108 days, it'll just be blank or not or hidden. And to me, that will breed future distrust between the consumer and the real estate community. And I think the actual reason they're doing it, having talked to many agents about this over the last couple of weeks, because I've sort of been sparring with the community about this specific topic, is that the actual motivation is really not to help the seller. It's to really help the real estate agent keep the listing. In other words, consumers don't want to say, hey, you know, I'm going to take my home off the market because nothing's going to happen for the next 2, 3, 4 months. And right. And the real estate agent is worried that they're going to lose the listing when they come back on the market. Somebody else might get it. And that's not good for the market. You can't cherry pick data.
So, Jonathan, why not a more targeted solution than not reporting this? Why not just toll days on the market for, I don't know, 90 days until the coronavirus theoretically passes?
Let's say this crisis is over in 90 days, and then we all go out and you know, start, you know, rates are low, and we start buying up houses, you know, as a nation. The reality is that every house that was on the market in this period has an additional 90 days added to the days on market. The consumer is not stupid. They are going to understand that we just came out of this. So to me, it's a lot about nothing. It's not going to help stimulate sales activity, and it endangers the idea of people coming back in because they're going to say, well, are these numbers real now? Are they being tweaked? I just think the whole idea is a bad idea.
So what's going on in the world of appraisals? How are people doing appraisals on either refis or new purchases if everybody is socially distancing?
Right. It was quite astounding. Up until a week ago, prior to last week, when there was an announcement by FHFA, which is the regulator over Fannie and Freddie, and there were some standards being set for allowing appraisers, when mortgages are done, not to physically inspect a property if they're in danger. And we were getting, for a couple of weeks, we stopped inspecting interiors of properties in New York prior to Cuomo, the governor's shutdown or quasi-shutdown. And because I just couldn't put my staff in harm's way. We had a couple of close calls, and it seemed crazy, especially when it became apparent that you don't have to be symptomatic to be a carrier. So not only are we putting our staff into harm's way to do an inspection on a mortgage appraisal, but we're also putting the homeowner or the occupant of the home in danger. So that seemed out of the question. So there was a stalemate. And across the agencies in the mortgage spectrum, appraisers were rapidly growing numbers, pushing back on being forced to do appraisals, you know, interior inspections. And so essentially what is coming out of all this pushback is that there are different types of alternatives, something that my firm is doing a lot of in New York, because our risk to our appraisers are going on public transportation. It's not that they're in a car, insulated, driving up to the curb. You know, that's really not an option in New York, as it might be in the suburbs. So that what's happened is there's been these solutions that are evolving, and now we're doing essentially what are called desktops, where you're sitting at your desk, and we're actually getting photos from the homeowner. All this is less than a full interior inspection by a professional, but the idea, and I think the government's thinking, is that it, you know, helps liquidity, keeps things moving forward. What they're not is they're not on cash out refinances. They're not waiving the interior inspection requirement, so that makes it all problematic. And, you know, the second this gets out of, you know, if this became mainstream where we could do no inspections for refis, I can only imagine the fraud and the predatory lending that would simply explode. And so I don't think you're going to see as much of that in the solution, simply because the emphasis is on the sales side, not the refi side.
Quite fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about real estate in the time of pandemic. What can we do virtually? Can we use FaceTime to inspect a house? Can you do these virtual 3D showings? Or is real estate one of those things that you literally have to get into the space and look around and see what's going on yourself?
So I think that virtual is clearly going to be an option for many during this crisis, but I don't think that it goes mainstream. I think it's more on the margin, and I think because of the human element of, you know, the sort of the passion around housing, I think it's a lot harder to convince many people with their largest asset in play here to just do a sort of an all digital. However, that's the thinking now, and you know, that may change if this goes long enough. This crisis goes long enough. One of the things that has been really problematic that I think will benefit from the virtual phenomenon would be actual closings. You know, you can be in a state like Maryland where you can do closing almost entirely on a single iPad, and you go across the line to, say, Virginia, and it's, you know, you're signing papers that say you signed another paper, you know, the tremendous, you know, tremendously inefficient. And I think there's going to be a lot of cleanup of that. One of the things we're seeing in the appraisal industry, or the valuation in general, is something that we call curbside appraisals. And the idea is that you know, if you're in the suburbs, the appraiser drives up to the front of the house. They can, you know, if there's nobody around, this, you know, social distancing, they can kind of walk around the exterior of the property. But they physically, you know, and a friend of mine actually just wrote about this in California. He's already doing it, where you just call the homeowner on FaceTime, and then they literally walk you through the house. And you point, you know, ask them to point in certain directions and make sure that you can see things. And then while you're doing it, because you can't capture the video with FaceTime, and, you know, I'm sure there'll be alternatives, or there is an alternative, they're just doing screenshots of the video screen that they're viewing the house on, to capture it so that when they deliver the report to the client, whether it's a lender or a private individual, that there's some digital reference, you know, visual digital reference to the interior of the home. And I think this is going to play out significantly after this aftermath, in the aftermath of all this.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
So that makes sense for appraisals, and that certainly makes sense to be a little more virtual and efficient on closings. But I keep coming back to the issue of how every piece of property is unique. Photographs don't really capture a neighborhood, the unique view of a given property, the feel you get when you walk into certain houses. There are certain architecture that just has this, the right energy, the right vibe. And sometimes you walk into a house that looks spectacular online, and you're immediately recoil. There's just something off about everything. So while
smell,
appraisals,
or the smell, you know, which, you know, we can run into too, or, you know, you're next to, you know, you have a property out in a rural area, and there's a tremendous odor from the farm coming, you know, coming from your neighbor. I mean, there's all kinds of problems with, you know, going completely virtual. That's why I'm very skeptical that it replaces the in-person experience. And I know the appraisal industry itself is very worried that banking will just go all virtual and then worry about the consequences later in terms of collateral valuation. And, you know, that I'm not that worried about that, but I certainly is a concern. And for homeowners, I just have a hard time processing, and maybe that's just me, of, you know, a first time buyer just buying something online. You know, that's challenge enough with a car doing it the first time. But, you know, a house, I think, is a little bit more, there's more intangibles.
There can be little doubt about that. And we haven't even talked about inspections, where someone literally has to come and look at the foundation, look at the roof, look at the plumbing, the electrical system, all the machinery, how can you possibly do that virtually?
You can't. Or anything you do is something less than an inspection, and the something less could be a little less or dramatically less. And that's the problem. One of the things that if this carries on, this crisis carries on longer than anybody thinks, and we have a severe economic, meltdown or whatever you want to call it going forward, there's going to be a tremendous amount of cleanup on the other side in terms of foreclosures and workouts and, properties that shouldn't have been purchased for what they were purchased because the property is not what it appears. I think that there's a lot of concern about that.
I just have to share a funny story with you. You've been to my house. I've been here almost 6 years. When we first saw this house online, there's a whole long story I'll spare everybody, but I had set up a Zillow alert. I want a contemporary house either near the water or near the woods, with the master bedroom on the ground floor, the laundry room on the ground floor, and I wanted it to be contemporary. And I kept on getting these crazy $30 million mansions in East Hampton. To find a regular house like that was rare. Lo and behold, our house in Locust Valley pops up, and we go to see the house, and every time we go to visit the house, the owner is cooking something. They're frying bacon, they're baking muffins or cookies. I mean, we visited the house 7 or 8 times, and no matter what time of the night or day, stuff was being cooked. And we get the engineer's report, and it says part of the roof has been replaced. It's a contemporary house with a flat roof. Of course, flat roofs are a big pain in the neck, and the engineer says this was repaired. You should, and the house is 30 years old. You should plan on replacing the roof sooner rather than later because it's going to be a problem. Lo and behold, we move into the house, and within a week, you could smell the mold. You could smell mold is really the wrong word. You could smell the dampness from the leaking roof. And fast forward 3 years later, we replaced the entire roof of the house. It was not inexpensive. The smell was the frying bacon. That was the hint. They were covering something up.
Well, I had an experience probably 10 years ago in a litigation where the retail store, this is a condominium in Manhattan, and the retail store at the street level was a Starbucks, and they had, and the landlord had incorrectly vented the exhaust from the store, and it was getting, the smell of like Jamaican Blue Mountain bold coffee was 100% of the air in the apartment right above it. You could hardly think of anything else, and imagine trying to litigate that virtually. It would be impossible.
I want to talk a little bit about what the marketplace is going to look like after we get through this coronavirus. I'm assuming one day this will pass and things will start getting back to normal. What is that going to look like, and how dependent is it on how severe and long-lasting our lockdown is?
So I think the future is highly dependent on how long the lockdown lasts. You can imagine if the longer that the lockdown lasts, the more damage to our economy occurs, even with the stimulus money that's coming out. The problem is that if this runs very long, you're going to have a much higher unemployment rate, and in theory, then that cuts down on potential purchasers for properties. If it's a short window, then there's a greater probability that the market recovers quickly. But we have no way of knowing, and there literally at this moment, there is virtually no data that reflects, in a large, something that's available and clean and speaks to the whole market. So longer the crisis, the more the damage, the bigger the hit to the housing market.
Let's take a reasonable scenario. Let's say the lockdown is 2 months, and sometime by the middle of May, we start crawling out from our shelter in place and social distancing, and things get back to normal, more or less. What sort of real estate market are we looking at then? Do we resume the spring selling season, or do we lose half the season? What happens then?
I think then at that point, the spring selling season has essentially passed us by, because I don't think the market's going to snap off like, you know, flipping a switch. What you might see is the market being pushed to the fall. You know, I think of an annual housing market. I always describe it as a two hump camel, spring and fall, and the spring hump being much larger than the fall hump. We could very well see a big fall, a large release of pent up demand if unemployment doesn't surge out of control. I mean, that's really, the liquidity of being able to make payments on mortgages and all that is really, kind of determines that. The other thing is, I think what is maybe a silver lining in the sense that in markets that have been deteriorating over the last couple of years, and that certainly skews to the higher end markets and not sort of lower priced or mid-range type markets. Higher end markets, the problem has been is that sellers have been anchored to, the market conditions several years ago. And this, in my view, would clearly accelerate their ability to see the market as it is, as opposed to the way it was. And the reason I see that is, anytime you have an economic event, a milestone, the consumer starts to, you're unable to look before the milestone occurred as some sort of basis of rationale for, what you think your home is worth today. And I think there's going to be a lot of that going on. And I think my gut, if we're talking about May, that feels incredibly optimistic, just in the context of the virus and how it'll spread. It seems like the earliest would be something more in the lines of July.
And you mentioned the tendency of sellers to be behind the market. We saw something very similar in the early to mid-2000s as we headed into the financial crisis. Sellers always seem to be remembering the peak of the market, but they don't seem to recall the recent drop. Is that just a persistent quality of real estate that people want to get the top and they not paying attention to what is actually taking place within their local market?
Especially in a multifamily market, in a city where you might have properties in the same unit line, you own 15A, 20A sold 3 years ago for X. So you want to be 5 or 10% more. This is very common, even though they missed, that there was some sort of, big downturn in the market. They're looking in public record and saying, well, that's the last sale. And the problem with that is that it takes a seller that's anchored to the wrong number 1 to 2 years, at least in my observation, to decouple or de-anchor from that incorrect number, not feel like they left money on the table at the closing. And now we have, and I think that's one of the reasons why in New York anyway, we saw this uptick in sentiment in January, because the sellers just went through two difficult years in the market with all the new taxes. And this seemed to be a fresh start entering 2020. And now that's gone.
So you mentioned taxes as suppressing the real estate market the past couple of years. What about this $2 trillion bailout? I keep reading about all of these goodies sprinkled throughout that are going to help either real estate developers or real estate investors. What's in this bailout package for the benefit of real estate?
Well, I think there'll be, hopefully, from what I can tell, there'll be some relief for landlords. The problem with, and this is something I'm not clear is in the bailout, is that a large portion of the real estate community are independent contractors, and they are therefore not eligible for unemployment. So this could be a real problem. I think anything coming into the economy is going to be helpful. I just don't know if it's soon enough to help small independent contractors that are going to really be challenged financially over the next 2, 3, 4 months.
Jonathan, who are independent contractors? Do you mean real estate agents, appraisers, inspectors, or
agents, real estate agents, home inspectors, the majority of appraisers, people that are servicing their real estate industry, the vast majority, you know, with the exception of executives, tend to be independent contractors. So they're very much at risk going forward without some sort of help. I know there have been attempts to lobby to put this in, but I'm not clear whether that's included in this stimulus package.
Huh, quite interesting. So based on, without guessing whether this lasts till May or July or beyond that, just based on what you've seen January, February, March, what is the next 30 to 90 days in the real estate market look like?
Well, first of all, I think all the research that's going to come out at the end of the, at the completion of the first quarter, is not going to be very reflective of the conditions that have actually changed on the ground because of the lag, because this crisis is measured in days, not weeks or months. And so I think there'll be somewhat of a false positive in terms of, data that describes the conditions of the market. I think what you're going to have is this period of inactivity is going to see listings removed from the market. We're going to have a tremendous amount of pent-up demand built by those that build up, that were intending to buy, that, are not worried about their job. And assuming that rates stay low, you could see some sort of release of any kind, small, medium, large, but some sort of release once the quote unquote, coast is clear. It's funny. On my blog, I wrote sort of a list of things that, might change after the crisis is over. And one of them is, I would think that everybody that's cooped up in an apartment or a house is starting to think about something, a larger space in the future, whether they carry it out or not. It certainly provides a little oxygen for the real estate community to think about the future.
We were just having that very identical conversation about how your house is laid out and whether or not the structure of your home is going to lead to either a baby boom or a divorce tsunami after this is over. If you're in a sort of compact space that's on a small footprint and rises off of that, there's really nowhere in the house to hide. If you're on sort of a longer piece of design with a little more acreage in your backyard, well, you have a place you can go and escape from your significant other, just for a break for a little bit. I'm really curious to see how our divorce infrastructure is set up and what sort of a wave of, all right, that was 30 years of marriage in 3 months, I'm out. I wonder what sort of stuff we're going to see following that. I know you have a large house with a lot of places you can hide. My house is set up like a railroad flat, so it's much longer than it is wide or deep. So if we're on the opposite ends of the house, you can't even yell to each other. You can't even hear anything.
That's actually what my wife and I are in that same arrangement. We both, our home offices are on opposite ends of the house, and then we meet in the middle in the kitchen and have meals together. I mean, I'm simplifying it a bit, but it kind of works.
That we've been doing the same thing. We try and meet every day for breakfast at 8:30, lunch for 12:30, happy hour at 5:30, and then dinner at 6:30. And depending on the weather, we'll either take the dogs out for a walk, the two of us. Last week it was 65 degrees. I took the convertible out for a ride. So we're keeping a little bit of a schedule with both alone time and together time. And I've been talking to friends who have some of my employees who recently got married, and man, let me tell you, this is a baptism of fire. There's one thing to have a date that lasts a couple hours. It's another thing to have a date that starts in March and ends in July. I mean, you really find out if you're compatible with someone.
I think people are going to really learn about their partners. And we actually, you know, in all seriousness, we're expecting just from feedback, a large part of our practice are legal support services. The minority, you know, probably about a quarter of our business really is relating to, you know, mortgage type work, refinances. But we do a tremendous amount of matrimonial type litigation, and the attorneys are getting ready because this could be a phenomenon. And I think I agree with your, you know, about the birth rate. You know, we could have a baby boom and we have to figure out what to call the next generation.
The pandemic boom. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Is there anything else we haven't touched upon that you think is worth bringing to our listeners' attention?
I don't think so. I think the only, you know, sort of final point is that right now we don't really know that much about the future of the housing market, other than that we don't know that much about the future of the housing market. And this really is a developing story.
We have been speaking with Jonathan Miller, president and CEO of Miller Samuel. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure and come back and check out the podcast extras, where we keep the tape rolling and continue discussing all things real estate. You can find that on Apple iTunes, Spotify, Overcast, Stitcher, wherever your finer podcasts are sold. We love your comments, feedback, and suggestions. Write to us at mibpodcast@bloomberg.net. I would be remiss if I did not thank the crack staff that helps put these conversations together each week. Charlie Vollmer is my audio engineer. Michael Boyle is my producer. Michael Batnick is my head of research. I'm Barry Ritholtz. You've been listening to Masters in Business on Bloomberg Radio.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.